No mistake at all. Perhaps you have read the figures wrong. It may be 2,000. It is written in letters, not figures, 20,000. I again felt rather like an individual of but average gastronomical powers sitting down to feast alone at a table spread with provisions for 100. Mr. Rivers rose now and put his cloak on. "If it were not such a very wild night," he said, "I would send Hannah down to keep you company. You look too desperately miserable to be left alone. But Hannah, poor woman, could not stride the drift so well as I. Her legs are not quite so long. So I must e'en leave you to your sorrows. Good night."
He was lifting the latch. A sudden thought occurred to me. "Stop 1 minute," I cried.
"Well?"
"It puzzles me to know why Mr. Briggs wrote to you about me, or how he knew you, or could fancy that you, living in such an out-of-the-way place, had the power to aid in my discovery."
"Oh, I am a clergyman," he said, "and the clergy are often appealed to about odd matters."
Again the latch rattled. "No, that does not satisfy me," I exclaimed. And indeed there was something in the hasty and unexplanatory reply which, instead of allaying, piqued my curiosity more than ever. "It is a very strange piece of business," I added. "I must know more about it."
"Another time."
"No, tonight, tonight!" And as he turned from the door, I placed myself between it and him. He looked rather embarrassed. "You certainly shall not go till you have told me all," I said.
"I would rather not just now."
"You shall. You must."
"I would rather Diana or Mary informed you."
Of course, these objections wrought my eagerness to a climax. Gratified it must be, and that without delay, and I told him so.
"But I apprised you that I was a hard man," said he, "difficult to persuade.
And I am a hard woman, impossible to put off."
"And then," he pursued, "I am cold. No fervor infects me."
"Whereas I am hot and fire dissolves ice. The blaze there has thawed all the snow from your cloak. By the same token it has streamed onto my floor and made it like a trampled street. As you hope ever to be forgiven, Mr. Rivers, the high crime and misdemeanor of spoiling a sanded kitchen, tell me what I wish to know."
"Well, then," he said, "I yield, if not to your earnestness, to your perseverance, as stone is worn by continual dropping. Besides, you must know some day, as well now as later. Your name is Jane Eyre."
"Of course, that was all settled before. You are not perhaps aware that I am your namesake, that I was christened St. John Eyre Rivers?" "No, indeed. I remember now seeing the letter E, comprised in your initials, written in books you have at different times lent me. But I never asked for what name it stood. But what then? Surely—" I stopped. I could not trust myself to entertain, much less to express, the thought that rushed upon me, that embodied itself, that in a second stood out a strong, solid probability. Circumstances knit themselves, fitted themselves, shot into order. The chain that had been lying hitherto a formless lump of links was drawn out straight. Every ring was perfect, the connection complete. I knew by instinct how the matter stood before St. John had said another word. But I cannot expect the reader to have the same intuitive perception, so I must repeat his explanation.
"My mother's name was Eyre. She had two brothers, one a clergyman who married Miss Jane Reed of Gateshead, the other John Eyre, Esquire, merchant, late of Funchal, Madeira. Mr. Briggs, being Mr. Eyre's solicitor, wrote to us last August to inform us of our uncle's death, and to say that he had left his property to his brother, the clergyman's orphan daughter, overlooking us in consequence of a quarrel never forgiven between him and my father. He wrote again a few weeks since to intimate that the heiress was lost, and asking if we knew anything of her. A name, casually written on a slip of paper, has enabled me to find her out. You know the rest. Again he was going, but I set my back against the door. "Do let me speak," I said. "Let me have one moment to draw breath and reflect." I paused. He stood before me, hat in hand, looking composed enough. I resumed. "Your mother was my father's sister."
"Yes."
"My aunt, consequently." He bowed. "My Uncle John was your Uncle John. You, Diana, and Mary are his sister's children, as I am his brother's child,
undeniably."
"You three, then, are my cousins. Half our blood on each side flows from the same source."
"We are cousins, yes."
I surveyed him. It seemed I had found a brother, one I could be proud of, one I could love, and two sisters whose qualities were such that, when I knew them but as mere strangers, they had inspired me with genuine affection and admiration. The two girls on whom, kneeling down on the wet ground and looking through the low, latticed window of Moor House kitchen, I had gazed with so bitter a mixture of interest and despair, were my near kinswomen, and the young and stately gentleman who had found me almost dying at his threshold was my blood relation. Glorious discovery to a lonely wretch! This was wealth indeed, wealth to the heart, a mine of pure, genial affections. This was a blessing bright, vivid, and exhilarating, not like the ponderous gift of gold, rich and welcome enough in its way, but sobering from its weight. I now clapped my hands in sudden joy. My pulse bounded. My veins thrilled. "Oh, I am glad! I am glad!" I exclaimed. St. John smiled.
"Did I not say you neglected essential points to pursue trifles?" he asked. "You were serious when I told you you had got a fortune, and now, for a matter of no moment, you are excited."
"What can you mean? It may be of no moment to you. You have sisters and don't care for a cousin. But I had nobody, and now three relations, or two if you don't choose to be counted, are born into my world full-grown. I say again, I am glad." I walked fast through the room. I stopped, half suffocated with the thoughts that rose faster than I could receive, comprehend, settle them, thoughts of what might, could, would, and should be, and that ere long I looked at the blank wall. It seemed a sky thick with ascending stars. Every one lit me to a purpose or delight. Those who had saved my life, whom, till this hour, I had loved barrenly, I could now benefit. They were under a yoke. I could free them. They were scattered. I could reunite them. The independence, the affluence which was mine, might be theirs too. Were we not four? 20,000 pounds shared equally would be 5,000 each. Justice, enough and to spare. Justice would be done. Mutual happiness secured. Now the wealth did not weigh on me. Now it was not a mere bequest of coin. It was a legacy of life, hope, enjoyment. How I looked while these ideas were taking my spirit by storm, I cannot tell. But I perceived soon that Mr. Rivers had placed a chair behind me, and was gently attempting to make me sit down on it. He also advised me to be composed. I scorned the insinuation of helplessness and distraction, shook off his hand, and began to walk about again.
"Write to Diana and Mary tomorrow," I said, "and tell them to come home directly. Diana said they would both consider themselves rich with £1,000, so with 5,000 they will do very well."
"Tell me where I can get you a glass of water," said St. John. "You must really make an effort to tranquilize your feelings."
"Nonsense! And what sort of an effect will the bequest have on you? Will it keep you in England, induce you to marry Miss Oliver, and settle down like an ordinary mortal?
You wonder, your head becomes confused. I have been too abrupt in communicating the news. It has excited you beyond your strength."
"Mr. Rivers, you quite put me out of patience. I am rational enough. It is you who misunderstand, or rather who affect to misunderstand."
"Perhaps if you explained yourself a little more fully, I should comprehend better."
"Explain? What is there to explain? You cannot fail to see that £20,000, the sum in question, divided equally between the nephew and three nieces of our uncle, will give £5,000 to each. What I want is that you should write to your sisters and tell them of the fortune that has accrued to them.
To you, you mean?
I have intimated my view of the case. I am incapable of taking any other. I am not brutally selfish, blindly unjust, or fiendishly ungrateful. Besides, I am resolved I will have a home and connections. I like Moor House, and I will live at Moor House. I like Diana and Mary, and I will attach myself for life to Diana and Mary. It would please and benefit me to have £5,000. It would torment and oppress me to have £20,000, which, moreover, could never be mine in justice, though it might be in law. I abandon to you, then, what is absolutely superfluous to me. Let there be no opposition and no discussion about it. Let us agree amongst each other and decide the point at once.
This is acting on first impulses. You must take days to consider such a matter ere your word can be regarded as valid.
Oh, if all you doubt is my sincerity, I am easy. You see the justice of the case.
I do see a certain justice, but it is contrary to all custom. Besides, the entire fortune is your right. My uncle gained it by his own efforts. He was free to leave it to whom he would. He left it to you. After all, justice permits you to keep it. You may, with a clear conscience, consider it absolutely your own.
With me, said I, it is fully as much a matter of feeling as of conscience. I must indulge my feelings. I so seldom have had an opportunity of doing so. Were you to argue, object, and annoy me for a year, I could not forgo the delicious pleasure of which I have caught a glimpse, that of repaying, in part, a mighty obligation, and winning to myself lifelong friends.
You think so now, rejoined St. John, because you do not know what it is to possess, nor consequently to enjoy wealth. You cannot form a notion of the importance £20,000 would give you, of the place it would enable you to take in society, of the prospects it would open to you. You cannot,
and you, I interrupted, cannot at all imagine the craving I have for fraternal and sisterly love. I never had a home. I never had brothers or sisters. I must and will have them now. You are not reluctant to admit me and own me, are you?
Jane, I will be your brother. My sisters will be your sisters, without stipulating for this sacrifice of your just rights.
Brother? Yes, at the distance of 1,000 leagues. Sisters? Yes, slaving amongst strangers. I, wealthy, gorged with gold I never earned and do not merit. You, penniless? Famous equality and fraternization, close union, intimate attachment.
But, Jane, your aspirations after family ties and domestic happiness may be realized otherwise than by the means you contemplate. You may marry.
Nonsense again. Marry? I don't want to marry and never shall marry.
That is saying too much. Such hazardous affirmations are a proof of the excitement under which you labor.
It is not saying too much. I know what I feel, and how averse are my inclinations to the bare thought of marriage. No one would take me for love, and I will not be regarded in the light of a mere money speculation. And I do not want a stranger, unsympathizing, alien, different from me. I want my kindred, those with whom I have full fellow feeling. Say again you will be my brother. When you uttered the words, I was satisfied, happy. Repeat them, if you can, repeat them sincerely.
I think I can. I know I have always loved my own sisters, and I know on what my affection for them is grounded, respect for their worth and admiration of their talents. You, too, have principle in mind. Your tastes and habits resemble Diana's and Mary's. Your presence is always agreeable to me. In your conversation I have already for some time found a salutary solace. I feel I can easily and naturally make room in my heart for you, as my third and youngest sister.
Thank you. That contents me for tonight. Now you had better go, for if you stay longer you will perhaps irritate me afresh by some mistrustful scruple.
And the school, Miss Eyre? It must now be shut up, I suppose.
No, I will retain my post of mistress till you get a substitute. He smiled approbation. We shook hands, and he took leave. I need not narrate in detail the further struggles I had and arguments I used to get matters regarding the legacy settled as I wished. My task was a very hard one, but as I was absolutely resolved, as my cousin saw at length that my mind was really and immutably fixed on making a just division of the property, as they must in their own hearts have felt the equity of the intention, and must, besides, have been innately conscious that in my place they would have done precisely what I wished to do, they yielded at length so far as to consent to put the affair to arbitration. The judges chosen were Mr. Oliver and an able lawyer. Both coincided in my opinion. I carried my point. The instruments of transfer were drawn out. St. John, Diana, Mary, and I each became possessed of a competency.